with Elias. You just made the list.
And feel the power.
I am the game.
All right, boom. See me, yeah? Roy Johnson, yeah? AKA Big Wavy, yeah? And you're listening to Graps and That, yeah?
Hello and welcome. It's 2019 and we've already had one of the biggest wrestling cards, shows, pay-per-views, spectacle events of the year, Wrestle Kingdom 13. And you know what? What better way to start 2019 on the Graps and That podcast with me, the King of Mike Style. You can use a hashtag in front of that from now on if you want. T-shirts coming soon. Anyway, you have chosen the right place to start your 2019 off with one of the biggest podcasts that you will come across in the whole year, in the whole of 2019. And you've come to the right place because I have grabbed one of the best guests I could to break down all the main haps, all the main talking points from Wrestle Kingdom 13 weekend. That's right, weekend, because we're going to break down New Year's Dash, the night after the memorable January 4th Tokyo Dome spectacle, Wrestle Kingdom 13. So you know what? Let's not waste any time. Let's get straight over to my chat, the King of Mike Style chats with Amy O, Phoenix NJPW.
So I'm here with my guest, Amy.
Hello, how are you doing?
I am super good. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for having me join you today. This has been something I've been looking forward to since Wrestle Kingdom. We have so much to talk about.
This is amazing, and thank you for taking the time. I know time zones aren't always easy. UK voice to US voice. But we are here because of one thing. One thing brings us together, and that is our love of professional wrestling, which I know you are a huge lover of, because I follow your Twitter handle, which is at Phoenix NJPW. Tell me, Amy, how you picked up that Twitter handle.
Phoenix NJPW. Well, Phoenix is where I live. It's also a really cool name. So for a while, I toyed with just being Phoenix on Twitter as opposed to Amy O, which is my actual name. But I decided that I didn't want to necessarily put forth a personality on Twitter. I wanted to be myself on Twitter. So this is where I live. And then, of course, NJPW, because I absolutely adore New Japan Professional Wrestling. And so those were just the two combinations there.
Love it. It's simple, but you are known as Phoenix NJPW, and you've got exactly what you wanted out of that.
I love it.
I think it's great. It's original. It's catchy. People don't forget that. And here you are talking to Graps and That from the UK about Wrestle Kingdom. Now, we spoke about this, didn't we? We spoke about doing something over Wrestle Kingdom, because like I said, I've seen your Twitter handle, and the way you post, the way you write and word things is so good. It's so interesting, and your passion really shines through for New Japan, especially for New Japan. And that's why I thought, you know what, that's my guest for Wrestle Kingdom, that's my review guest for Wrestle Kingdom. And here we are for the first time, Amy and Graps and That, and I love it.
Oh, I'm so excited. And I have to extend something right back at you. I had listened to your NXT coverage. I believe you were a guest on Omega Luke's podcast. And I was so blown away by your level-headed, rational approach. But yet you also have this great passion for wrestling and a vast knowledge of it. And so when we started talking about doing Wrestle Kingdom coverage together, I was so excited, because this is exactly the type of podcast that I want to, discuss wrestling with. It's just have fun and talk for as long as we can about this wrestling that we love and just get really excited about it.
Thank you. That's really kind of you to say. Yeah, we've had some good feedback about some of the shows that myself and Omega Luke have done. And hopefully I'm not just known for being the voice on his. Hopefully I'm known for being my independent self as well, and spreading, just spreading the love on professional wrestling world. So Amy, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about my experience with Wrestle Kingdom and New Japan as a whole. Now, I've only really watched New Japan religiously, okay, religiously. So that's subscribing to New Japan, New Japan World, since October 2017. So that's when I took my subscription out. Chris Jericho debuted at World Tag League, as we know, all that time ago, and attacked Kenny Omega in that brutal assault. And that's what really got me into the I say weekly programming of New Japan. We know it doesn't work like that. But the monthly, the fortnightly programming that New Japan puts together, the way it builds its cards. My first Wrestle Kingdom I watched live was Wrestle Kingdom 12. We all know about that. And by the way, yourself and your friend Jen on your Dragon's Den podcast was awesome. Reliving that, I listened to it just last week. It was awesome to relive Wrestle Kingdom 12 with yourself and Jen talking about that. And we'll get onto your podcast later. But I just, going from my excitement from Wrestle Kingdom 12 to being absolutely blown away by the card that Japan had put together for us for Wrestle Kingdom 13, I was just amazed. I mean, how long have you been watching New Japan? I would say religiously, you know, subscription-wise.
Subscription-wise, I started at Wrestle Kingdom 12. And that's mm-hmm. also one of the reasons why we wanted to go back and rewatch Wrestle Kingdom 12, was not only to look at how much has changed in 2018 in New Japan, but also to sort of relive our own journey, because my co-host Jen and I both started at the same time with Wrestle Kingdom 12. So when we watched it again, it felt like watching it for the first time, because when we watched it back then, we didn't really know who all of the wrestlers were. We knew Kenny and we knew Jericho. But looking at the way that Wrestle Kingdom 12 and Wrestle Kingdom 13 have both bookended 2018 in New Japan Professional Wrestling is really symbolic of just how explosive of a year this was for wrestling and wrestling worldwide. So Wrestle Kingdom 12, you have Jericho and Kenny Omega, and they are just right out the gate with brutality and pummeling each other. And you have Naito and Okada, and Naito is just so over with the crowd, and you have the great Rainmaker Okada. And then so much has changed during 2018. You have Okada's no longer champion. It's now Kenny Omega, and Okada is trying to find his story and sort of stumbling through his own darkness and playfulness and confusion as to who he is without that belt. So then we have Wrestle Kingdom 13, and that wraps up those storylines in the most explosive and thrilling way. And I just love how that worked out, where you have the beginning of the story, the end of the story, and then a look to the future in 2019.
I know. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. New Japan, the way they book their Wrestle Kingdoms, for anyone that's new to it or listening, I'm guessing that Wrestle Kingdom is not guessing, I guess I kind of know, is the culmination of a year's hard work. So it's effectively New Year's dash to Wrestle Kingdom. That's the way their programming works. So Wrestle Kingdom 12 was the end of feuds, and like you just said, the beginning of the Okada searching for himself again throughout 2018. Obviously being successful that night against Naito, but losing the title to Omega, like you've just touched on, at Dominion in 2018. We've now gone that stretch, and now we sit here again after such an amazing Wrestle Kingdom 13, wondering what's next, what's for this year, and what's going to finish at Wrestle Kingdom 14. What feuds are we looking at to finish? I think it's genius booking from New Japan. I think they do it with perfection, but man, it makes the years and the time go quick. Am I right?
Absolutely. I had just started watching at Wrestle Kingdom 12, and for a good half of the year, I had thought that that had taken place over 2 years. There's been so much that is packed into a year of storytelling that it feels like it catches on, because it flies by so fast. So it's so hard to go, wow, Jericho and Omega was really in January. And the Young Bucks versus Golden Lovers, that the Golden Lovers reuniting, that happened this year too. Wow. There's so much that happens.
That was one hell of a match, by the way.
Yes.
I mean, that match went almost an hour, didn't it, for a tag match, 45 minutes.
That was the most emotional tag match I've ever seen in my life. It was great.
The four guys in that match are spectacular at storytelling. There's no one better. There's no promotion better, but there's no, I don't think, three, let's put it this way, three guys, maybe four, include Ibushi in this one, that actually can sell a better story. I think Okada's done it over 365 days, but to do it in a squared circle over 30, 35, 40 minutes is genius. And that's why they're the best wrestlers in the world. But Amy, I tell you what, let's just get straight to Wrestle Kingdom 13. Let's get to January 4th, Tokyo Dome, Wrestle Kingdom 13. And you know what? I'm going to run down the matches. We'll go in order. So why not start with the NEVER Openweight Championship, the dream match, not only for us as viewing public, as the worldwide fans, but it was a dream match for the challenger from the UK, Will Ospreay, as he challenged Kota Ibushi, who was the champion, the reigning defending NEVER Openweight Champion, going in to the Tokyo Dome. This match blew me away to open the card. 25 minutes, just about. What did you think? I mean, I was exhausted. I had to come up for air afterwards. I mean, what were your thoughts?
Likewise over here. I mean, this match sets the tone for Wrestle Kingdom. I don't think it was any accident that they booked this as the opening match for an explosive card. And the electricity in the air from the fans, and indeed from Ospreay and Ibushi themselves, both of them coming out in their entrances, both of them have a fire in their eyes and grins on their faces, although Ospreay's set to a hard determination really fast. But they both were in this match for themselves. It almost felt like we were watching two athletic champions who were sort of testing what they could do against each other, testing each other's strength, testing their own strength, and they were battling it out and just proving their own ground to each other while we had the thrill of being able to watch this take place. It was just a monumental match, and it really set the tone for how Ospreay was going to be going in this year. I mean, this was a gritty, determined Ospreay who had to pull from himself this strength and ferocity to do what he had to do to this person that he's been idolizing for since he was 15 years old.
Absolutely. I mean, the way, I was just blown away by just how you were describing that match. It was awesome. Ospreay, Kota Ibushi taken a I believe a concussion. So we are led to believe now as well. Where do you think Ibushi picked that concussion up in that match?
I think it's probably when he slammed his own head into the turnbuckle. This is one of the things that I was watching for in this match, was that both of these men give more regard to the thrill of the sport and the thrill of the athleticism than they do their own bodies. So I was expecting going into this match that there was going to be something by the end of it that would leave an impact or a scar, if you will, on the match that this had carved onto both of them. And I think this is where Kota Ibushi picked up that concussion, was on the turnbuckle where he had come up. And by the way, let's talk about real quick the cinematography of this match, both in the camera work and in their movesets themselves. They had that wonderful callback where you have Ibushi looking back in shock at Ospreay, who is just looking at Ibushi with ferocity. And then Ibushi turns around and he's got blood streaming down from his nose. And then he gets this shocked look on his face, followed up almost with a bit of insanity with his grin before they just go at it again. It was incredible.
I mean, they did that, didn't they, on the day two Road to Tokyo Dome, the main event, that epic tag team match with Golden Lovers versus Tanahashi and Ospreay. They did a similar shot, didn't they? And it took the Twitter world by a storm when this gif was made for that. But for them to do it again and get the spot so right again, because it was almost like it was an accident at the Road to Tokyo Dome show. But this was no accident at the actual Tokyo Dome. This was no accident at all. This was pure perfection, art, storytelling, professional wrestling at its finest. And you know what? I saw a lot of people saying they were disappointed with that match. How can anyone be disappointed with that match? That was the perfect way to start Wrestle Kingdom. Did you see people disappointed? Tweets, disappointment?
I heard Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez express a similar sentiment. And I can understand if you're going into this match and, again, the expectations are so high. I mean, they're both climbers. So are they going to jump from the scaffolding and climb and jump onto each other? Are they going to just have this massive flipping, kicking contest the entire time? When you've built something up so much with so much anticipation, sometimes just watching it play out can be a little disappointing. At the same time, if you watch this match afterwards, so I've rewatched this match three times since Wrestle Kingdom because it was so good. You see that in the context of Wrestle Kingdom and in the context of Ibushi and Ospreay and their story that they're trying to tell with each other, and the story of Will Ospreay and his ascension into New Japan Professional Wrestling for this year, you see that this match is really just the pinnacle of what they could achieve in this match together. I thought it was fantastic, although I understand that sometimes when you're so excited about something, when the day finally happens, the excitement that you've already lived through, the various ideas that you have about what it could be like, have already happened. So you've already experienced it in your head so many times by the time it comes around.
Absolutely. It's like, I don't know, should we compare like Christmas? I don't know. You're expecting something, you get it. You're an hour, like a new big toy, a games console. You've got it. You've waited for ages. You've now got it. You've played it for an hour. It's done. It's dusted. Maybe that was what, I don't know if that's the right way to go about describing it, of course. But like, you know, you wait so long, it's here, you've got it, you've played it, you've had an hour, and now it's time to go and eat the turkey.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. I mean, I've not yet watched Wrestle Kingdom back. I was trying to wait a bit longer than I normally would to rewatch things. And I've done so well to not go back to it straight away. Because when I go back to it, I want to watch the whole thing in its entirety. Without just going, I'm going to pick and choose that match. I'm going to give myself 3.5 hours to watch it back with Japanese commentary, I must add. But for me, I mean, the match was awesome. I mean, I had, like I said, and that was watching it live at 8 o'clock in the morning, UK time. I know it was a lot earlier for you this time around. I mean, usually it's the other way. I mean, usually for WWE pay-per-views or anything else, usually it's us staying up at 1 a.m. in the morning. Going to bed at 4, getting up for work 2 hours later at 6. So, like, the boot was on the other foot a little bit. I mean, what's that like for you with the time zones? Like,
so
because it's...
it's a challenge. I do think, though, that in the lead-up to trying to figure out when it was going to start, what time it was going to air, I did end up hearing a lot from people from the UK, from Australia, saying, now you know what it's like to be us. And I think... as much as a sacrifice as it is for something that you love. And I think that it is a sacrifice to stay up. We stayed up from 1:30 a.m. until 7 o'clock in the morning to watch this show, because after it ended, we were still awake from all the caffeine we had consumed before. But I think that that's also part of the wonderful experience of sharing wrestling worldwide and being connected in a global way, especially with something like Twitter, where you are sharing this experience with each other around the world. And sometimes we sacrifice, sometimes you sacrifice, but we all know that that sacrifice comes from a passion of the thrill of the fight and the thrill of the stories and a love for wrestling. And I think it's great to share that.
Absolutely. Well, I'll be honest with you. I much prefer, and you might be surprised, but I much prefer setting my alarm for midnight, 12:30, and getting a coffee and watching a WWE pay-per-view at 1 o'clock in the morning, being so excited, loving every minute of it, and going to bed at 4. I love that feeling. And then getting up and it's a new day and refreshing, thinking, wow, last last night, and I use that term, last night's pay-per-view was amazing. I've had a few hours, I've had a sleep, it's digested, it's sunk in, and I loved it, and these are the reasons why. When Wrestle Kingdom finished, not only this year, last year as well, it was lunchtime here. And I was like, I feel a bit lost, I could go to bed. I wanted to go to bed, I wanted to wake up and be a new day. But I had a whole afternoon, and it was still ticking over in my head, but it hadn't digested. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. You need it's sort of like Christmas Day versus the next day.
You Here have, comes that games console again.
Yeah, exactly. You have all of the excitement. To me, Wrestle Kingdom just felt like Christmas. And I think part of that is because Christmas just happened. But it does feel like that. It feels like you have all of the excitement, all of the joy, all of the buzz, all of the camaraderie with your community. And then you go to sleep and then you wake up and then you reflect. And I think that when something as momentous as this happens, you need to have a chance to reflect on it before jumping right into analysis or what you've seen or anything like that. The best things, you take the time and you savor it and you reflect on it. And having a reset helps with that for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So bring on the WWE pay. Bring on the Royal Rumble at the end of the month. That's all I'll say. Are you, Amy, I'm not overly sure. Are you a WWE fan? Are you a religious WWE fan watcher?
I am not a religious WWE watcher. I am a religious New Japan watcher. That said, I was a WWF fan religiously back a long, long time ago in the mid to late 90s. So I've started going back into it after getting reacquainted and reigniting a love for wrestling with New Japan. Started watching WWE, and it's been really wonderful and fascinating. I'm not always thrilled with the storylines. I'm not always thrilled with the booking. Those, you know, are common complaints. But for me, it feels like I've stepped out of a time capsule and have seen just how much has changed in the 15 to 17 years that since I've been watching it religiously. Yeah. And so the women's division, especially, I mean, we had Jerry Lawler screaming about puppies when I was watching it. Now we have Becky Lynch and Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey and Mae Young and Io Shirai. And it's wonderful. So
it's a golden age for the women's division in WWE, but some of the other bits are a bit hit and miss. I'm probably a bit like you. I started watching in 1999. WWF Attitude Era, and I am a religious WWE fan. New Japan is new to me. A lot of the other indies, the independent scene in the UK is new to me, but New Japan is the second closest to my heart, I'll put it that way. But it's slowly taking over. Maybe I shouldn't say that live on air, I suppose. But it is. So spoiler alert, New Japan is becoming my favorite wrestling promotion. But anyway, look, let's move on. So Kota Ibushi, Will Ospreay was awesome. Hope you don't mind me saying, we crowned a new Never Open Weight champion from the UK. Will Ospreay, congratulations to you. What's next for Ibushi, Amy? Just briefly, I mean, talk of, you know, the Bucks and... Well, from today's news, so we are recording. It is Monday, the 7th of January. We're recording at, it's about 8 p.m. UK time here. So we've had the news, I believe it's filtering through, that Kenny Omega has announced that he's not going to be going to WWE. I've not seen Kenny officially say this. So I say that with that question. I mean, what's next for Kota Ibushi?
There is a heavy pause lingering in the air for all of us right now. And I think that through this sort of fog of unknowns, it's really hard to know exactly what is going to happen. I do expect that wherever Kenny goes, Kota goes. They have a partnership of over 10 years, and they're just so closely connected and their lives are so intertwined that I can't imagine that they would separate without finishing their story, without doing these things that have been more important to them personally than titles in New Japan. So I think that wherever he goes, Ibushi goes. I don't know. I know that they said that he's off the next tour due to the concussion. At the same time, Ibushi's also had a concussion during the G1 when he was fighting Kenny Omega. So not to minimize concussions at all, these are very serious things that require serious medical attention. And, you know, you really want to take care of your brain because it's the only one you have. That said, I think that perhaps the time off for the concussion may also coincide with the time off for Kenny to figure out what their direction is going to be.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen the cards for the New Beginning Tour. We've seen most of the matches announced, the big matches announced, which we'll get onto a little bit later. So let's just try and get through the Wrestle Kingdom 13, the rest of the card. So Ospreay, new champion. So we start the show with an amazing match. I loved it. You loved it. And we crown a new champion in the opening contest. So we then were treated, Amy, to the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Title match in a three-way. Suzuki Goon, El Desperado, and oh my god, let me get this right. I've just completely had a mind blank. Kanemaru. What's his first name? It's completely gone. Oh my goodness.
I don't know. I just call him Kanemaru.
Kanemaru is gone. I've done myself in live. I'm recording, and it'll come back to me in a minute, and I'm shout it out. But let's go with Desperado and Kanemaru representing Suzuki Goon. They defended against Sho and Yo, Roppongi 3K, and, well, sorry, the winners. Sorry, they weren't the winners. I've completely had a mind blank. I've completely destroyed myself here, Amy. LIJ, Bushi, and Tagagi, who won the Junior Tag League?
Oh,
Sho
boy.
And Yo. Sho and Yo, they won the Junior Tag League, didn't they? It was second year in a row. LIJ, how did they get themselves in to make this a triple threat match? It was a triple threat final, wasn't it? If I'm right.
I think it was a triple threat final.
Because much happens.
I know for sure. So Roppongi 3K was my pick to win this match. At the same time, I was really glad to see a different sort of outcome. The nice thing about this match is that all three tag teams are strong contenders, strong competitors. They're fast. They're athletic. They're a blast to watch. So the entire match was a lot of fun. But
I was gutted, I must say, Amy. I was gutted to see the long reign from Suzuki Gun ended. I did have LIJ down in my predictions, but Desperado and Kanemaru have been fantastic for 8-9 months. They've been champions since, I can't even remember when they won the titles, but I think they were hitting about 305 days as defending champions, I think, if I'm right. But
that's a very long title reign.
It was a long reign. I think they were second in behind the Young Bucks for one of the recent longest title reigns. But no, I mean, Tagagi, he brings something completely new to like the junior division. He's a big guy.
Yeah. It's really great to see this. I mean, he's so good. He is so good. And it's been wonderful to see. So when he first joined LIJ, that was my first exposure to him. And he is fast and he's big and he's strong. And he really feels like, and in this match especially, that he could be a rising star to a top contender for the junior heavyweight division. He's really, really good.
Well, we'll have to keep our eyes on the best of Super Juniors this year because it's going to be very interesting. No Kushida, as we know now, also leaving New Japan. So that the Super Juniors this year are going to be a fantastic, fantastic watch. I mean, this match was awesome. I mean, I think Suzuki Goon, I mean, after they got tagged out of the match early on, they struggled to get themselves back in. So played the heel tactics, but never became legal again throughout the match. So that was great storytelling, not being able to fully defend their titles by tagging themselves back in with Bushi and Tagagi and Sho and Yo destroying themselves along the way. I loved this match, and it was a great way to follow up an amazing opener. And I must say, I did call it. If anyone read my WordPress blog and read my predictions, I did call LIJ for this match. But I did secretly deep down want Desperado and Kanemaru to win. I mean, what do you think's coming next? I mean, obviously, without getting on to New Year's Dash just yet, we know who the next challengers are for the tag titles. I mean, what do you think's next for, let's put it this way, Sho and Yo? because there's only so much you can do, I guess, without becoming stale. Am I right? I worry they might become stale as a tag team. And I think High Voltage? Is it Show?
Show is the gold and Yo is the silver.
That's right. So Show, I think, has a very bright future. Nothing against Yo.
Sure, for sure. I think that they remind me a bit of Kushida in the sense that they've done everything that they can do in the framework of this division that they're in the junior tag team championships. One of the things that they seem to have been subtly alluding to over the course of this last year, as they've both gotten stronger, they've both bulked up muscularly quite a lot. They've also seemed to have been distancing themselves a little bit from the excitement of Roppongi 3K when Rocky comes out. Wrestle Kingdom 12, they were both all in it. And as the year goes on, they kind of smile and they humor Rocky. They love Rocky, but it seems like there's a bit of maybe a new direction in the future for them. I would not be surprised to see them either take off in the heavyweight tag division, if that's something that they might pursue this year, or if they might break off and do a singles run. I think both of them could be really great as single stars.
Definitely. I mean, like I just said a minute ago, you know, last year's showing more so than Yo in the Best of Super Juniors really put him over. And again, without getting into too much of New Year's Dash, you're absolutely right about a potential heavyweight tag team run, potentially for the year. I think either would work. But now that Kushida's moved on, do you need another Super Junior in there? Like Yo, and Yo and Show could break up. It could be interesting for a few months. Let's put it that way. So there's three options, I'd say. Three very decent options. Were you happy with the new tag team champions, LIJ, Amy? Were you quite happy with that?
Absolutely. And for me, it was the first time to really find myself behind Shingo. He gave it everything at Wrestle Kingdom. They deserved that title based on how they were wrestling, what they were doing, how explosive they were. They just climbed to the top of that mountain, grabbed the title. They earned it. It was fantastic. And that actually set a great tone for excitement for Shingo and what he's going to be doing this year.
Yeah, he's going to have a big year. A very, very big year. So new champions. Another great match. But that's Wrestle Kingdom. So we didn't expect any less at all. Moving on. Revolution Pro British Heavyweight Championship. Tomohiro Ishii, the defending champion against Zack Sabre Jr. Again, another UK guy, very UK strong card early doors with Ospreay earlier on being a challenger, Zack Sabre Jr. being a challenger. New championship introduced from Rev Pro as well, which Rev Pro, the old championship, which Ishii brought to the ring, is going into the museum in Portsmouth, which is an hour from my home. So that's interesting for you or anyone else that's listening. The museum is a car drive away, I guess. I wouldn't walk it because it's too far. But basically, I mean, Zack Sabre Jr., Tomohiro Ishii tore the house down. I mean, both styles, I mean, both guys. For me, and I'll put it this way, Amy, in my WordPress blog again, I think both are contenders for being MVP of New Japan throughout 2018. Ishii's G1 run was phenomenal, that match with Omega. Many people remember that. But Zack Sabre Jr., New Japan Cup winner, he made Sanada tap out. He made Naito tap out. He had that amazing match with Okada at Secure Genesis in May. Both had great years, and this match was no different. It was awesome. I want to hear your point of view. Zack's style, Ishii's hard-hitting style, and the eventual winner. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Man, Zack Sabre Jr. and Ishii both trade with a currency of pain. And the difference is how they go about doing it. Zack Sabre Jr. is a master technician. He is probably, I'm just going to say it, he's one of the best wrestlers in the world. He has such a unique style that is very difficult to escape from. And he is slippery and quick, and he's constantly working his brain to figure out how to escape, how to counter, how to adjust a move to sometimes turn it into a completely different move while putting on the pain to his opponent. Ishii, on the other hand, he just needs to get you trapped. He needs to get you in a corner. He needs to slam you down on the ground, whatever it is that he needs to do to get somebody to stop and then pummel him. One of my favorite spots in this match was when Zack Sabre Jr. baited Ishii with chops. And as many have probably felt themselves, when somebody starts chopping Ishii, you just know that it's going to go down. He's going to come back. He does his channeling of rage. He feeds on that kind of pain and it builds him up and strengthens him. And then he gives it back tenfold in retribution. The difference was, as soon as Ishii charged up and then went to retaliate, Zack Sabre Jr. slipped behind him, got him into another submission move, and had baited him into that. So this was a match to see where somebody would have an opportunity to use their strengths and not be stopped, to be at the point of weakness for someone else. And Zack Sabre Jr. is so good. I don't think Ishii had an answer to Zack Sabre Jr.'s quick thinking and adaptability in the ring. It was such a great match, though.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's a great analysis once again. So thank you so much for that. I mean, every time you hit Ishii hard when he's on the ground, one of my favorite things about Ishii is the way he just stands back up, stares at you, and the crowd just, you've pissed that guy off. excuse the language, PG. non-PG. But you're absolutely 100% right. Ishii had nothing that Zack couldn't counter. And Zack kept hitting him with new maneuvers, new reversals, new submissions. And it just played out to be one of the best matches of the night for me. It was wrestled in a different style. When I say the word wrestled, I loved it. And Zach's going to be a great champion. And do you know, only last night here at Revolution Pro, he faced Pac last night over in Revolution Pro. I didn't see it. It was over in London. So waiting for the footage to be released, but I'm hearing really good things. So Zach's going to be in for a big year, but I'm interested in what you think for Ishii this year. Obviously, again, without saying, and I'm boring myself here, without stating too much about New Year's Dash, I think we know his immediate opponent. But what about for the rest of the year? I mean, he's not going to win the G1, but he'll probably get 12 points again. So where can you see Ishii? I mean, will Naito? I don't know. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. I mean, what do you think for Ishii this year?
I think that both Zack Sabre Jr. and Ishii have a huge potential in New Japan. You had said previously that they were your MVPs of New Japan for 2018. And I have to agree with that. Both of their G1 matches were spectacular. Every match that I've seen either of them in has been phenomenal. And Ishii, at the beginning of 2018, I started with not really knowing him very well. I likened him to Suzuki because both of them, you know, did the take in pain, come out, and then pummel their opponents back in fury. But Ishii does it in earnesty. He's very sincere, and he has a different sort of mannerism than Suzuki. So I really just enjoy watching him. And I think that since things have shaken up without getting too far ahead, I think that he will have plenty of opportunities to maybe chase some new paths and carve some new roads that haven't necessarily been available to these other guys on the roster during 2018. I think he'll have a lot of new surprises, and I'm excited to see where he goes.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that was a British Heavyweight Championship. Was that the first time it was defended at the Tokyo Dome for Wrestle Kingdom? Was it? I'm not sure. Maybe.
I think so.
We've had the Ring of Honor Championship defended before, haven't we? Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly a few years back. So perhaps, so groundbreaking. So Revolution Pro, Zack Sabre, Ishii, you've done Britain proud and the whole wrestling world. So if you're listening, thank you. IWGP Tag Team Championships, the Heavyweight Tag Team Championship match was up next. And I want to just get this one thing off my chest. This was the match on the card, because there always has to be one, that I wasn't all that excited for. Now, don't get me wrong, I was looking forward to it. But was I overly excited? after everything else that been announced? No. And I'll tell you why. This for me was too much of an obvious outcome. We know the Young Bucks were leaving. Everyone knew that. I mean, you'd have to be living under a rock for many, many years to not know the Young Bucks were leaving. Evil and Sonata won World Tag League. Tama Tonga and Tongaloa. I love the guys. And for as big and as mean as they are, they always seem to lose big matches when they're champions, I guess. I know they win the big matches when they go to win the titles, but they also lose them in an obvious point of the year for New Japan. I hope I'm making sense. That being said, the entrances for the Gorillas was awesome. The entrance for Evil and Sonata was awesome. The Young Bucks throughout the match were awesome, and it was a great match. But for me, it was just too obvious. And this is the match where I found myself was able to make a light snack. We did crown new tag team champions, LIJ, Evil and Sonata, again, second year running, last year, Killer Elite Squad, after winning World Tag League, beating Killer Elite Squad for the titles. Same again as happened this year. Will there be a time that we maybe get bored of Evil and Sonata? And bored is a harsh word, Amy. Please don't think I'm using that as a full-blown attack at Evil and Sonata. I love LIJ. But they've both got so much potential to be singles competitors. I mean, is this going to be their final year as tag team champions and then maybe a breakthrough for someone like Sonata first in the G1 that we keep saying? I mean, what are your thoughts?
You know, I don't know. I absolutely see your point with this match. I was excited to watch it because I love the Young Bucks, and I knew that this was going to be their send-off match. So I was curious to see how they were going to do it. I also was thrilled with Gorillas of Destiny's new entrance and their new outfits and the interplay with Tama Tonga trying to be the good guy Tama Tonga and Tongaloa being frustrated with that and like, no, we're going to subterfuge, and him like saying, no, we have to do this the right way. So that was interesting. And Evil and Sonata as a tag team, that was my first introduction to them, was as a tag team. I didn't even know that they could do a singles run until the G1 of 2018. I'm confused with Evil and Sonata. I think that Sonata is a phenomenal wrestler, a phenomenal athlete, and he's extremely talented, but only when he wants to be. So it's very confusing watching Sonata because sometimes he's very apathetic and he doesn't seem to care a lot about the match or the moves into it. And sometimes he does. And in this match, he brought that G1 Sonata that I was so blown away with. His match with Zack Sabre Jr. was one of my favorite matches in all of the G1. And he brought that Sonata there. And that Evil brought that energy there too. So I think that when they deliver with 110% intensity and passion, and when they really care about it, they're amazing. But when they don't, then it becomes a challenge to really continue finding yourself caring about the match, because I find myself caring more about the potential that I know that they have and hoping that that will come out in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're going to be tag team champions for the foreseeable future, I think. I don't think you win World Tag League, win the titles at Wrestle Kingdom and lose them 4 weeks later. I don't think that's New Japan's way of looking at it or booking it. But I also think they could potentially be tag team champions until G1, which is going to be August, July, August time. So we are 6-7 months away. If they're going to be tag team champions till then, they could find themselves in the same block as each other in the G1. That for me would be very interesting. Facing each other as tag team champions, one getting the upper hand over the other. And I feel that one could then eventually break away from LIJ. They could be a falling out from the G1. That's how I would go about booking it, perhaps.
Oh, that would be so exciting.
I think it would be. But keep them as tag team champions. Keep them dominant and having to force themselves to not get along or try and sort their differences, which won't happen. And then it could lead to a huge blowout, and one being successful and one struggling struggling to deal with the loss of a tag team partner. I guess that would potentially be how I would look to book it, but I'm not Gato, so I can't do that. Right, let's move on. So we had new tag team champions, Evil and Sanada. It was a lot of fun in the end. I know you looked forward to it. Like I just said, it was my match. I pinpointed as a snack, but I did love it. It was great, and I'm looking forward to rewatching it with Japanese commentary. So up next, we had the US Championship match. Cody was the champion. He was defending against Juice Robinson, who I am a huge fan of, by the way. I'm just going to put it this way, okay? This match was short and sweet. It was to the point, and it was genius. And it was genius because this was Juice Robinson putting his spin on it, putting Cody to bed, regaining the US title, becoming the first two-time IWGP US champion on the biggest stage. Juice has just made a huge name for himself. After what was a slightly disappointing run, originally as US champion through the G1, having a poor G1, now he's really rekindled himself. One thing really annoyed me, and I wish I could quote the tweet and tell you who it was, but I saw someone tweet immediately after the match and said, and he said, sorry, that the IWGP US champion is, championship is now irrelevant again. Irrelevant. I don't think there's anyone at the moment better to make the championship more relevant than Juice Robinson, because for me, it became irrelevant with Cody not being seen on New Japan TV for a while. Do you think I'm being harsh, Amy, or am I to the point?
Well, I think that Juice has a definite job to do now with this title. I think that he should have had some title defenses while he was the U.S. champion. His match with Jay White of the G1 special, which was my first live show ever attending. I attended that show, and the crowd was on fire for hatred with Jay White, for excitement for Juice. When Juice won that championship, the crowd went ecstatic and we were on our feet, and it was incredible. And then you have all of this excitement and energy and charge, and then it sort of gets passed on to Cody, who at the time is the all-in hero, and he had just won the NWA title, and there's all of this history and lineage. So it was very confusing as to why Juice was had this this explosive match, and then the title is now Cody's. And so it felt kind of like a reset, giving it back to Juice. And I just hope and trust in the booking that they will do him right by letting him have a run of proper defenses with this title, because Juice is so fun. I love him so much. He has passion. He has heart. He has sincerity. He has drive, and wrestling really means something to him. He loves New Japan. He just signed a 3-year contract with New Japan, and he loves being there. And I love watching him there. The kids love watching him there. I think this was a great match. I think that I expected Cody was going to drop this title. But even knowing that Cody was going to drop the title here, it was still a great match. And I loved how Juice proved with two finishers beyond a shadow of any doubt that he was claiming that title. It was his on the biggest stage of New Japan. And it was a great ending to that part of the story. I just hope that in the future that this run is as great as it could be for him.
Yeah. And I think it will be. Hence why I think they've put it back around his waist. So I think we're both going to get what we want there. I think Juice is going to have a great run. It may be a 4-month reign. It may be that we get to secure Genesis and he has a tough challenge, but a 4-month, 5-month reign wouldn't be too bad for Juice. He can then again, press the restart button, go again in the G1. I think his tag team with David Finlay is also going to be one to watch for the World Tag League again at the end of the year. We're already looking at the end of the year, which is crazy. And this is what we said at the start of the podcast, the way New Japan book, have you looking at every single month? It's not like WWE and this pay-per-view and that pay-per-view. We have things to look forward to and stories to build to, which makes New Japan so special. So Juice Robinson, good luck. And Cody, good luck in your future endeavors and what you're going to do. It's great for the wrestling world. But yeah, Juice Robinson, new US champion. Short match, short and sweet. to the point. It's what it needed to be, and that's exactly what you've just backed up and said. So we're getting almost to the nitty-gritty. We've just got the AWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship to discuss briefly. Kushida, the defending champion against the Bone Soldier, Taiji Ishimori. This was a lot of fun. And one thing I'll say, Amy, just before this, is I noticed a bit of a trend regarding finishing moves throughout the pay-per-view so far. It was getting to the point where finishers were very relevant at the end of matches. This, for me, was no different. Kushida couldn't hit his finisher. And again, I've had a mind blank. I've gone hoverboard. Back to the Future. It's just called Back to the Future. He couldn't hit that on Ishimori, and Ishimori eventually hitting Kushida with his finishing maneuver. I can't remember the name of that. Apologies again. So if you're listening, please remind me. And Amy, hopefully you will in a moment. But Taiji Ishimori leaving with the championship. I expected it. I think a lot of people expected that. I didn't expect Kushida to be retiring, which he's done today as of recording this episode. So the 7th of January. Amy, what did you think of the Junior Heavyweight Championship match?
I was really excited about this match. I love Kushida. And let's talk about Kushida's entrance. The Back to the Future entrance with Doc Brown Taguchi was amazing.
I totally forgot that kid with the giant head. It was great.
Oh, man, that was so freaky. It looked exactly like Kushida's face. It was so good. And I've heard and have watched previous Wrestle Kingdoms where he came out with the whole entrance for Back to the Future. And I was so thrilled to get to experience this one live. I was jumping out of my seat and shrieking and clapping my hands in delight. It was wonderful.
It's clear now that it was a really top send-off for Kushida, wasn't it? 8 years. Yes. And he got to do that. And Taguchi's awesome, by the way. He is.
I love him.
But it was a good match, wasn't it? After the fun of that entrance and that disguised send-off that we didn't know was happening, that was a moment for Kushida. And the match itself was great. I mean, I think some people are saying four and a half stars. It was really good. Kushida never lets us down. Ishimori is awesome. I mean, that physique on that guy is unbelievable. He doesn't eat burgers. I know that much. But it's just, he definitely doesn't eat bread. He might eat burgers. He doesn't eat bread.
Yeah.
But seriously, I mean, I'm happy that Ishimori is junior heavyweight champion. Again, we're probably looking at a 6 to 7 month reign for that. But I mean, he's, by the looks of it, he's probably got his first challenger nearly, I would say. Again, no spoilers on New Year's Dash as of yet. We'll get to the talking points of that in a bit. But I'm excited for the title reign. I'm also excited to see what the future holds for Kushida. Anything you want to add to the junior heavyweight title before we get to the, I'll call it the triple main event?
Sure. I think that for Kushida, this was a wonderful send-off. This was also a wonderful passing of the torch to Ishimori. I think both of them got to show their fight, their will, their skill, and both came out strong in that match. This was not a send-off that left Kushida lower than he was before. This was a send-off that left him powerful and strong, and also left Ishimori extremely credible for this title match. He is a credible champion. I am excited to see what he's going to do. And I also love how after the show and the backstage comments, he said that he was waiting for his future challenger and gave a very significant nod by calling his belt Mr. Beltson to Hiromu. So I think that that will be something that will be really fun to look forward to in the future. Yes.
Definitely. That would be, we've got to be looking at something like Dominion. For a match like that. I mean, Dominion being the second biggest pay-per-view of the year for New Japan last year was probably the best show of the year, full stop, in the world of pro wrestling. So I expect no different from Dominion in June. I think the 9th of June is usually that day. So very excited. If you're listening, 9th of June, Dominion, I believe, in a Soccer Joe Hall. Right, let's get to it. I mean, I don't know what you thought of this match. I mean, I was super pumped to see Switchblade Jay White turn up in white. I think it was awesome. And Okada's thighs are back, Amy. the Rainmaker, Kazuchika Okada, returned at Wrestle Kingdom. I loved this. I had Okada down as my picks because I had this feeling Rainmaker would be back. If he wasn't back, he'd be back at New Year's Dash because he would have won this match. I had my Switchblade Jay White t-shirt on, I think. And I shot up out of my seat when he hit Blade Runner and took the pin, got the pinfall over Okada. It was amazing. The whole match, 25 minutes. It was perfect. Better than I thought it would be because I was a bit disappointed with last year's Jay White Tanahashi match. I'm not sure why. It was probably one of the worst matches of Wrestle Kingdom last year, pace-wise. But this was stunning. And Jay White is in New Japan, and Jay White is in New Japan to stay. This was a statement. Amy, the floor is yours.
Oh, my gosh. If there is one thing that New Japan Pro Wrestling does very well, among many others, it is their storytelling. And when Jay White came out with his white suit matching with Gato, that gave a significant statement. First, that suit was gorgeous. That suit was slick. It was classy. It was defined. It was sharp. But it also showed that he is a person to be feared. He is a strong force in New Japan for this year. He has the backing of Gato. He has the backing of New Japan. He came out there walking out like he was on top of the world. So then Okada comes out and he looks like the Rainmaker. He's got the robe. He's got the music. He's got the hair, the blonde hair, the eyebrows. Oh man. And then he goes onto the stage and I love his pants. I just prefer them. At the same time, he rips off those pants to show his trunks and the crowd goes nuts and I lose my voice screaming in my living room. I'm surprised my kids didn't wake up. It was incredible to see. And the intensity of this match was electrifying. He did the Rainmaker pose and the Rainmaker. And then, you know, by the time the ending came about and the Blade Runner was delivered, I couldn't even be upset because I know that this story is not over yet and it's going to continue. And this is part of Okada's own personal redemption arc. Maybe the story doesn't have to be solely focused on Okada, but this is sort of the path where Okada reclimbs and regains his strength to be the heavyweight IWGP contender again. And so this sets that story into 2019, but oh, what a story it is. It was phenomenal.
Well, there's your slogan for New Japan right there. What you've just said, you couldn't be upset with the outcome because that's what New Japan does. We compare other promotions. We have favorites in other promotions. I'm sure you do. I know I do. I can leave pay-per-views being upset with the outcome because my favorite has lost. New Japan does not do this. New Japan constantly breathes fresh life, fresh air into everything it does and everything it touches. That is why this is the best pro wrestling promotion on the planet. And I just said it. I did. I just said it. There you go. Amy, you were here for it.
That was beautiful, man. That was good, wasn't it? So well said. That was just
I should write a book now.
Yeah.
That's it.
You need
author
to mark
the year
on your calendar.
Graps and that book's coming out in 6 months. So yeah, Okada getting my words lost. Kazuchika Okada, Switchblade Jay White. Jay White getting the W. I haven't asked you this yet, but I'm going to ask you out of five stars, what would you give this match?
Oh boy, I would have to give it a five. I mean, it was the storytelling was there, the wrestling was there, the emotional intensity was there, that really thick feeling of betrayal and wanting to see Okada overcome. And, you know, I think with great matches, there has to be a great story. And the best matches that we've seen have a great story that is attached to them because it makes the fight matter. And Okada and Jay White's fight matters so much to both of them. For Jay White, for really cementing his position as a dominant force in New Japan, for seeking out weakness and destroying it. And for Okada, his story is is to find his strength again, to sort of have a rebirth into a new Okada with new, stronger pillars of foundation that supports him as he elevates to the top. So you have everything that matters so much. And then the fight delivers that story. Every punch is an exclamation point. Every Rainmaker attempt is a whole paragraph. And then the final chapter, this cliffhanger, this Blade Runner, was just incredible. It was a great match.
It was awesome. And your detail again, awesome. People that listen to this are going to love this. They're going to love this. You know, they're going to want more. They're going to want more Amy, New Japan review shows. So you got your work cut out for 2019. I'm telling you. You're going to be a busy lady.
Thank you.
Let's get on. I mean, we are getting to the real serious end. How much personal could this match between Tetsuya Naito and the Intercontinental Champion Chris Jericho get? This match blew my mind. Jericho is a genius. I'm not being biased because Jericho is one of my favorites of all time. Naito is one of my favorites of all time. This match was everything and more. Jericho's match with Omega last year was fantastic. It was no disqualification. There were rope breaks last year, I must add, for some reason, in an ODQ match. There was a few mistakes. There was no mistakes here for Jericho Naito. This was brutality at its finest. The referee was on call. The fans grew to this. It was just an awesome spectacle. Naito becoming an Intercontinental Champion again, winning in the Tokyo Dome, I think. Finally, I say, I could be wrong. It's been a while since Naito won the big one, won a big match in the Tokyo Dome. Let's put it that way. And please, Amy, correct me if I'm wrong with what I just said. But I love this. Again, Amy, I'm just tell me what your thoughts were on the IC title match between Jericho and Naito.
This match was an explosion of brutality, surprising brutality. I have never seen Naito this dangerous, this brutal, this fast. He was the one to start off the match with just pummeling and fists of fury, and he was going nuts, full-blown into Jericho. And this match, I expected, would be about Naito having to overcome the strength and brutality of monster heel Jericho. What this match became was both of them having to overcome the strength and brutality of each other. It was incredible. I mean, my favorite spot, I think, in this match was after Naito had taken a brutal beating from a kendo stick at the hands of Jericho, which left me cringing while I was watching. And then he gets up and he picks up the kendo stick like it's a baseball. And you have this lifelong baseball fan whose songs are played in baseball stadiums all over Japan. And he looks like a professional baseball player just knocking Jericho's ribcage out of the stratosphere into a home run. It was insane. And I think that they both really proved themselves. They both told their very personal, very bitter story. And this was a very bitter match between the two of them. And it was wonderful to see. It was great to see the side of Naito too, especially since the last year in Wrestle Kingdom 12, the whole crowd was expecting this to be Naito's moment of him winning against Okada, and he didn't. Okada won, and it left a lot of people wondering what Naito's direction was going to be for the next year. You have this guy who is a superstar of the company, a super talented athlete. He has a very complex and rich story for himself, and to see him take on this match and win, but through the sheer strength of brutality and overcoming that strength from Jericho as well, was just incredible storytelling.
It was. It really was. And on the back of what you've just said, I'm going to give you my first biggest prediction of 2019. Are you ready? Are you sure you're ready for this? Naito's journey to the IWGP Heavyweight Championship began on January 5th, 2018, the night after Wrestle Kingdom. After his defeat to Okada last year, he slept on it, went to the dash, got over it, had a whirlwind year last year. He He's going to have an even bigger year this year. He's got rid of the ghost of Jericho. I think that's the end of their feud now. It's been a 6 month long feud. I believe that's the end of it. Naito now can look forward to being the Intercontinental Champion. He can head to the G1. For me, here's my prediction. Naito enters the G1. Naito wins the G1. Naito wins the big one at the Tokyo Dome next year, wins the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, but he is also the Intercontinental Champion as well. We have the US Championship now. That can be a top undercard championship. Next year, Wrestle Kingdom, we are going to get our first ever IWGP Champion versus Champion main event at the Dome. Naito versus whomever the champion may be. Let's stick it out with Okada in the main event next year at the Dome. Champion versus champion. What do you think?
That would be very exciting to see. I think Naito is going to have a great, great year. And it's going to be thrilling to see where he takes place in the Tokyo Dome next year. If he is the contender for or the champion for, I mean, if he wins the G1, so yeah, he would be the contender, the challenger. And I think that that would be a wonderful place to see Naito. It would be very challenging if he lost at the Tokyo Dome. I think this is where he's got to claim it. I think he's going to go after it. I think this is going to be a great year for Naito. I think he's going to have a wonderful, wonderful journey ahead of him. And I think the fans are going to be really happy with that. It's his time. It's his time.
Definitely, 100%, 100%. So go Naito, 2019, Naito is your year, it's your year. Right, Amy, IWGP Heavyweight Championship match, the match we all came to the Dome for, the match we subscribed for, the match we waited for since the end of August last year, from that amazing Tanahashi-Ibushi match to Tanahashi-White to Tanahashi-Okada for the briefcase for the right to face the champion at the Dome. We got Tanahashi-Omega. Now, before I let you again take the floor, I want to read you from my blog, from my Wrestle Kingdom predictions. I want to read you word by word what I put, okay? So, Tanahashi's story is spectacular. Just when you think he is slowing down, he gets back up and wins the G1 in spectacular fashion. Also defending the briefcase against Okada and Jay White along the way. Omega, on the other hand, has not looked back since dethroning Okada at Dominion. Which way does this one go? I really don't know. What I do know is that this match will include high drama for around 40 minutes as we witness one of the greatest main events in the history of Tokyo Dome. My winner was a tough choice, but I went with my head over my heart. The reason being is that I strongly believe that someone is heading elsewhere very soon, and with New Japan having a Madison Square Garden show coming up, they will want the two biggest names battling for the biggest title in the company at that show. Winner Hiroshi Tanahashi. What do you think to what I predicted to what happened and to your thoughts as well? I mean,
applause.
This is
we need an applause soundbite for that. That was fantastic.
Thank you.
It was really great.
Much appreciated. I can try and add that. It's fine.
Yeah. We should. That was fantastic. And I had the same sort of prediction with Tanahashi, although it was based on different reasons. I was fairly sure that Kenny Omega might be leaving New Japan. However, I wasn't completely certain. And I am certain that he is now leaving New Japan. I believe that is the statement that he has given. But I think that there's so much to be looking at and so many different ideas and reactions and opinions that it's hard to know for absolutely certain what the directions are. But for this match was the match of a century. This was a epic tale of storytelling. This was an epic tale of drama. And it was very different from how I expected it. I expected going into this match that we would have the formulaic Tanahashi match. And I love Tanahashi, but his matches are very consistent. You have the superhero who becomes overcome by the supervillain of the match. And you, as the audience, are left just desperate for him to overcome and to succeed by the end of the match. And then he does, and he hits the high fly flow, and then he wins. So I was expecting that match. The match that we got was very, very different. the match that we got pushed both Kenny Omega and Tanahashi into breaking through a part of themselves to try to overcome this match. We had this wonderful spot where Tanahashi, just through sheer grit and frustration and desperation, takes the table that Kenny Omega had set up for him and for him to go through, and puts Kenny Omega on the table, and then climbs up in desperation to do the high fly flow. But by risking his morals, he risks himself, because he ends up taking the brunt of that table all to himself. So you have an immediate consequence of that compromise for his morals. And you had the ref shouting no. You had the crowd shouting no. We were shouting no in our living room. And that is the power of the storytelling of New Japan, when you can elicit these reactions from people from their heart and from just their very being, without thinking logically, without analyzing, but to react so strongly to a moment as powerful as this. And to watch it all play out was magnificent. And then you have Kenny Omega, who is playing the part of the heel, but in a different way than he's done before, and in a very different way than I think anybody really expected. There was a spot where he picks up Tanahashi and he slams him down spine first onto the announcer's table, forcing Tanahashi to have the moment of injury by his very actions. And it was just such a powerful and desperate match for both of them. And I think that they both went through the ringer of an emotional work together, even as they were dramatically opposed themselves to each other, they still suffered through and endured through together. And I think that they both put on the greatest match that they could have, and one of the greatest matches in New Japan history. It was incredible.
It was awesome. I would say it's probably my favorite. It's very different, okay? Omega Okada is very different. It's a different chapter. This, for me, I'm going to be brutally honest, this was my favorite Tokyo Dome main event. The match went the perfect amount of time to rewatch. I love Tanahashi. I love Omega. And to be there and enjoy the journey from last year from Tanahashi to the culmination. So like I said at the start of the podcast, being a subscriber for a year, I've learned that follow, and I've learned the story, and I follow the story of Tanahashi. And that's why it's my favorite Wrestle Kingdom main event ever, because I've been a part of the story for 12 months. And I loved it. And it was 5 stars, and I'm assuming you're giving it 5 stars, and I'm going to give Wrestle Kingdom a 10 out of 10, because I can't give it any more, because there's no such thing as giving it any more than a 10 out of 10. And I'm sure you're giving it a 10 out of 10. So I just can't wait for next year. I shouldn't wish my life away, but this was awesome, wasn't it? It really was.
It was incredible. Absolutely incredible.
And I'm glad that we've had the chance to review it. Tanahashi Okada, Madison Square Garden main event. What are your thoughts? Is that what you're thinking?
I think we're going to see some interesting developments heading after New Year's Dash. I think that we're going to see a lot of new changes. I think that we may be building to a Tanahashi Okada, but I think that there are going to be some bigger stones to climb over along the way first before we get there.
Sure. Okay. It's been a great show so far. We're going to just briefly, really quickly run through New Year's Dash, maybe just bullet points, just quickly. I'm just going to fire a couple of things at you, if you just want to give me your thoughts, and then we'll just give this show a wrap up. It's been awesome. I'd love to do this again with you. You know, we can discuss, hopefully the fans, the listeners have really enjoyed this show. So let's just hit quickly on a couple of things from New Year's Dash. Chase Owens, Yujiro Takahashi, rejoining Bullet Club, which was a good start. The Best Friends imploding again by the looks of it. Chucky T going crazy, so that's one to watch. The Will Ospreay Jeff Cobb spot is one to watch. Yuji Nagata Tomohiro Ishii could be building to something interesting. Never open weight 6-man tag titles were defended and retained. Suzuki Goon being brutal over LIJ. That chair shot from Naito is a gift that's been going around the world. It was a hell of a chair shot. We've got matches that have come off the back of New Year's Dash, and the main event, Jay White declaring that he is a front runner for the IWGP heavyweight title, which was also Yoshihashi's return match. So that's my really quick review of New Year's Dash. I mean, what were your highs, Amy, and what were your lows from New Year's Dash?
All right. So the highs were, we have the best friends sort of breaking down. The best part of that was Beretta seeing his mom in the audience and giving her a great big hug. And at Wendy. The end.
Is it Wendy or is it Sue? Is it Sue?
Oh, I don't know. I just called her Beretta's mom.
Beretta's mom. Wendy or yeah. Sue. Beretta's mom. We're waving at
yes.
you.
Yes. And you know, that was so endearing and so sweet. And then at the end, you have Chucky T breaking down, grabbing the chairs, going against Finlay, going against his mom. He went after Beretta's mom in the audience. He started to, and then he stopped. And I kind of wished he would have kept going, but I don't know how that would be received to go after somebody's mother. At the same time, that was a great spot that sets up a lot of conflict personally between the best friends, because so far that conflict has been directed at what Chucky's been doing to other people, and now Chucky T has done something that affects Beretta. So that will be really interesting. Osprey, we saw a fantastic match where we really got to see Osprey is going to be pushed to the moon and back in New Japan, and he has a great future ahead of him. He is investing in New Japan. New Japan is investing in him. The wonderful spot that we saw there was him saving Kushida from the elbow and showing mercy there and not going full force, and also giving him a respect with the fist bump. And we learned later that this was because Kushida was leaving, and they've shared such an intertwined journey together that it was really nice to see that respect to each other. Naito and Taichi with Suzuki-gun. Suzuki-gun was furious at the humiliation they suffered at the hands of Wrestle Kingdom, both with their losses and with the fact that Minoru Suzuki was on the pre-show. He was furious about this. So he has pledged and delivered on this promise to take that retribution in brutal fashion through the roster of New Japan. And they started with New Year's Dash, and Taichi brutally attacking Naito with the chairs and just pummeling him after he had already been beaten down at the hands of Jericho. I think we're going to see some brutality exchanged. I think we're going to see a continuation of the Naito that we saw at Wrestle Kingdom with the Naito that we will see in the rest of New Japan this year. I think that is going to be an interesting story to see play out, and one of necessity if he's going to be able to take on Suzuki-gun. Also, Tanahashi and Jay White. That is a story that they have been building for quite some time. Jay White used to idolize Tanahashi. He loved Tanahashi. He comes back from excursion and challenges Tanahashi. And now, a year later, we're looking at the culmination of that challenge. And I think that the next match we're going to see Tanahashi have to defend his title, he's going to have to face the monster of Switchblade Jay White. And that's going to be a lot more difficult, I think, than Tanahashi will have ever anticipated, considering the backing that he has behind him and the strength and power that he has grown to achieve in this year in New Japan.
Wow, Amy, amazing review. Amazing review altogether of Wrestle Kingdom and New Year's Dash. I know why I've chosen you, I know why I've asked you to be a part of my show, to show your knowledge, to share your passion. This has been a roaring success. This has been huge. It's been momentous for me. It's been an honor and a privilege to be able to speak to you, to discuss Wrestle Kingdom. Hopefully, like I've said earlier, we can do this again. Talk New Japan. That's something that I'm sure we can come up with. On our own terms. But Amy, before I say a massive thank you from not just me, but from my listeners, from the fans, from your fans, my fans, before I say a big thank you, tell me two things. Where can we find you on the social media? And tell us really quickly about your new Dragon's Den podcast, which episode one was fantastic. Quickly tell us about that.
Sure. First, thank you so much for having me. This has been a pleasure on an equal level. I'm absolutely thrilled to have joined you, and this has been wonderful. As for where you can find me on Twitter at Phoenix NJPW, and we will always be chatting wrestling there, whether it's NXT or New Japan. There's a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Oh, and AEW, of course. The Dragon's Den podcast, that is one that my New Japan best friend, Jen, you can find her on Twitter at Chetty, that's at C-H-E-T-T-I, and we just got together and started talking New Japan. We also have a very similar journey of New Japan. She's wonderful to talk to, and we thought it would be great to get a podcast together to talk about the storylines and trajectories and theories. And a lot of times we dive into the nitty-gritty of it. Sometimes it's a lot more fun where we just talk about the hair theories of New Japan professional wrestling and how costumes will reflect future character arcs. So we're looking forward to doing a lot this year. We'll be covering Wrestle Kingdom, and you can find us at Dragon's Den Podcast on Podbean until we get some future outlets out.
Well, I hope you can, guys. You guys can go and check that out immediately. Please do. You are missing out if you haven't already. It was an awesome first show. I subscribed almost immediately. Listened to it, I think, a day or two after it had been released. Loved it. It was amazing. 10 out of 10, 5 stars, whatever you want to give it. It certainly deserves that. So, Amy, from me, from the Graps and That podcast, from our Wrestle Kingdom 13, from your debut, this has been a top review show. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a pleasure. Cheers to 2019.
To 2019. Thank you.